Again, Jeff's words, not mine. I'm just the postman. In chapter 11 of John's Gospel, we have the account of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead, including some complaints from Mary and Martha, Lazarus' sister, because they thought that Jesus hadn't hurried quick enough in time to prevent their brother's death. And a sharp piece of dialogue between Jesus and Mary. When Jesus called Lazarus to come out of the tomb, Mary objects, saying, "But Lord, by this time there will be a bad odour. He's been there 4 days." Some of us were at Spring Harvest many moons ago when Rabbi Zachariah translated this to say, "He stinketh." Another story. Because Bethany was so close to Jerusalem, the word of this miracle soon got all around. And Jesus, feeling he needed a break, moved on to Ephraim for a couple of weeks. And then 6 days before the Passover, he made his way back to Bethany. This time, the welcome was very different. This is to be Jesus' last Sabbath, and he knows what lies ahead of him. So understandably, he seeks the warmth and the affection of friends. When Jesus arrived in Bethany, they made him a supper. Traditionally, a prolonged evening meal around a U-shaped table at which people recline. Martha served while Lazarus was amongst those reclining at the table. Matthew and Mark both tell us that this happened at the house of Simon the leper, who also lived in Bethany. Why would Simon host the event? Well, Simon had something to be thankful for too. He had also had a miraculous restoration, the healing of leprosy. And so there were two very special people sitting at the table, one healed from leprosy and the other raised from the dead. Then we have the Lord sitting in the middle. I wonder what they talked about. When we start to look at what happened next, we find some interesting differences between our gospel writers who witnessed the event and some who could only report on what they'd heard, thus providing with us a confused situation. For example, regarding the timing of the event, one says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Mary lived. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped the feet with her hair. When we continue to follow the narrative through the other Gospels, it appears that Lazarus had also already been raised from the dead. But the recorded sequence doesn't really matter. What stands out is the service of Martha. She served Jesus. Meanwhile, Mary sits at the Lord's feet listening to what he said, while Martha gets distracted by all the preparations that have to be made. She goes over to Jesus and asks whether he cares or not that Mary has left her to do all the work and demands that he tells her to help. "Martha, Martha," Jesus says. Can you imagine his soothing tone? "You're worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her." In other words, The truth that Mary is listening to is eternal truth. The meal and the preparation in the kitchen only have a short shelf life. So we can conclude that while instruction, divine truth, listening to God is a priority, true faith is accompanied by service. Jesus said, "Whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant, and I am among you as one who serves." Martha will always be remembered for her service. That's her nature. Of course, Mary was more reflective, more maybe spiritually minded. Martha was a doer. Thank the Lord for doers. Thank the Lord for those who serve. And something quite remarkable happens. We read that Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume, and poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped them with her hair. This kind of perfume was used at funerals to prepare a body for burial. Nard was a very rare herb grown in high pasture lands of India, and because it came so far and was so pure, it was very valuable. In fact, its value was known by the man who always thought only about the price of things, Judas. And as Judas who complains, why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. John is not impressed when he wrote his gospel. He expressed his views of Judas. He didn't say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief and keeper of the money bag. He used to help himself to what was put in. The perfume was in an alabaster jar. Alabaster is a white translucent stone, and the jar would be carved. It contained the nard. And alabaster also was very expensive, and so this was a real sacrifice on Mary's part. Mary's heart is overflowing with love and gratitude. She's behind the scenes at first, and now suddenly she takes centre stage. Matthew and Mark tell us, that the nard went over his head, whereas John indicates that it went all the way to his feet. This is an amazing and lavish expression. Mary loosened her hair, which was a radical thing for a woman to do in the presence of men, and used her hair to wipe his feet. This is in complete disregard of the Jewish rules about women loosening their hair in the presence of men. This is love that knows no limits. It's generous. She gave everything of value that she could lay her hands on. There must have been a stunned silence in the home. This is one of those events that can be obscured by all manner of interpretations. For instance, it's been used to justify ignoring the plight of the poor by saying, "Jesus said that the poor will always be with us. So that's just a fact of life that we can't change." These issues sometimes feel so compelling that we can find ourselves siding with Judas and wanting to object. Why wasn't it sold and the money given to the poor? Perhaps a good place to focus is to see this as a specific event happening at a specific time, not seeking to spiritualize it into a general piece of teaching about wealth. When Jesus says, "Leave her alone, Perhaps he means exactly that. Stop bullying her and recognise her gift of love as I do. This is not a theoretical discussion of what to do with wealth. It's a moment of lavish, embarrassing love. The action of a woman whose devotion overrides her sense of propriety. This act was an extravagant gesture that went against the social codes of the time. Judas's indignation at the waste might reflect how many would have felt. When Jesus defends Mary, he's not promoting a disregard for the poor, but highlighting the power of her gratitude. Mary's act of kindness would have strengthened Jesus for what was to come in a few days. There is an unhelpful pride in not being vulnerable enough to allow others to give to us. The image of the church being Christ's body is one of interdependence, not self-sufficiency. Jesus knew and models for us the willingness to receive from others as well as to give unstintingly. In following Jesus, there is space, indeed need, for personal acts of kindness to show that we care in thoughtful actions and not just words. Personal acts of caring give insight into what is really needed in a situation. There is also space to stand up for those who are in desperate need. And Judas's point was a legitimate one. If we only act on the level of personal kindness, we can be overwhelmed. If we only campaign, then our actions can lack insight and sensitivity. We need to hold together compassion and justice to allow God in us to serve God in others. Simon the leper organised the meal, and Mary of Bethany pours fragrant oil onto Jesus' feet. We can only assume that Mary's gesture was a once-in-a-lifetime action to express overwhelming gratitude for the restoration to life of her brother Lazarus, but also to express thankfulness for our own friendship with Jesus. It costs a great deal in terms of money value, but also in terms of the courage needed to do it in front of all the male disciples and in the personal cost of making herself vulnerable with such an intimate gesture of love. Thanksgiving has always held a central place in the Hebrew and Christian scriptures and traditions. And in America, their Thanksgiving Day is an important festival. In the UK, we often have celebrations for important family and personal events. We bring friends and relatives together to enjoy food and festivity. It usually costs, sometimes a lot. Thank you usually reflects an action that has blessed us. But when it comes to Jesus, even the most extravagant thank you cannot match up to that reflected in what Christ has done for us. Saying grace before a meal is a smaller and for some people daily ritual of thanksgiving. A pause in your daily routine to say thank you to God for the means of life. As we do this, we often use words that make us mindful of those who go hungry, and we renew our intention to share our own blessings. Being thankful, giving thanks, and praying blessings, and in a manner that might inspire others to do the same, is a good and godly way to live our lives. Amen.